following podcast contains adult materials such as swearing and mathematics. We'll let you decide which is scarier. Moreover, we of course know everything about the presenter mathematics. But if you think we've made a mistake, think of it as an application of Cunningham's Law. The best way to get the right answer on the internet is to post the wrong one. That's our excuse, and we're sticking with it.
Welcome to another episode of Maths at the Movies, where, simply put, we're two healthy people and a biohazard trying to critique movies from a mathematical bent. Oh. I am the infectious Thomas Woolley, and joining me now and forevermore are my co-hosts, the susceptible Ben Parker and the recovered Liz. How are you guys?
Very well, thank you, Tom.
I'm the other one, yes.
You're basically interchangeable to me.
How are you doing, Ben?
I've had a lovely day today. I've had lovely day.
Have you been frolicking in the snow?
I have. It was snowing yesterday. I went for a snowball fight yesterday. I built a snowman. Everything. Do I want to build a snowman? Yes, I did. Did you have a snowball fight at all, Tom?
I was thinking about this statistically. Though,
oh yes,
Ben.
Yes, yes, yes.
Tell me this.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
I mean, isn't it so unlikely, generally, that we would get troubled by heavy snow that it's not worth investing in the anti-snow stuff?
Ooh, well, that's a good...
Is it better just to pay for it as we go rather than kind of...
I mean, so the problem with all this kind of thing, this is economics, this is not statistics, okay?
And as we heard in Moneyball, you're not
well,
a fan.
Well, I kind of like economics. But I mean, the thing is, you then have to assign a cost to everything, okay? So you probably know more about this, Liz. I'm sure you know more about economics than I do. But you have to assign a cost to everything. So what's the cost of a human life?
Oh, well, I wasn't suggesting that we should let people die.
Yeah, this is the thing. We could pay £1 billion a year to like sweep the streets and get every bit of snow off the road. And if it saved, you know, two lives, is that worthwhile? The National Health Service has a rule of thumb, and I think they work on £25,000 for an active human life for a year.
£25,000?
Okay.
Is that really it?
Yeah, so if you buy, I mean, I might have the numbers wrong, but they have some figure. And if you could buy a drug which will cost less than £25,000 and it will make someone live an active life for a year, then you buy it, otherwise you don't. And this is what economists do. They have to assign a value to everything.
I mean, I was more just thinking whether I could, like, drive my car to the supermarket or, you know, get a train to New Cross.
Well, how much is your life worth, Liz? How much is it worth?
Oh, I don't know.
Have you thought about the cost of the climate, though? Because you have to assign a value to that.
I just wanted some kitchen roll.
Oh, but you have to think about the economics of it.
Climate change is all on you now. And do you know how many trees went into that kitchen roll?
Absolutely. I mean, oh dear. You know, how much does it cost? What's the benefit of getting it?
I'm just going to bury myself in the snow.
Wipe your hands in your jumper.
All right. That does explain the state of a lot of your jumpers, Tom.
It really does. Anyway, shall we get on? So this week we've all been watching, hopefully, Flatland.
Yes.
Yeah, so what, any general thoughts from people? What did people think?
I liked it.
I like bits of it.
Okay, then, shall we get into the movies?
Yeah.
Okay.
The movies, then.
So, Flatland is set in an authoritarian two-dimensional state,
yeah,
where your social status is determined by the number of sides you have, and circles, yep, rule with an iron fist.
They really do, even though they don't have any hands.
So circles are like the highest status because they have an infinite number of sides, and the idea is that you kind of graduate generation to generation until you become a circle.
Yep.
Although it wasn't clear to me in the film whether that was true or whether it was kind of a lie to make people think that if they just kept...
Oh, that is a... I hadn't thought of that. But no, there is that kind of fascist dictatorship in the background, isn't there?
Yeah.
That could suggest... The book, Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions, goes into this in great detail. So they do talk about how you get higher angles and lower angles, but I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
There in Flatland, we meet a square called Arthur and his granddaughter Hex, and we don't know where Hex's parents have gone. Hex, very intellectually curious, bright young hexagon called Hex.
Inventive naming there by the parents.
they really pushed the boat out.
I did think, you know, the square's called Arthur.
Yes.
It's like us having a child and calling it boy. Or in fact, just buh. Yep.
Buh. Just calling it buh. I can see that being the next celebrity naming craze. Buh. Where are you, buh? You're sitting next to Kerr with duh.
Arthur goes to work and all the workers are gathered together and warned that claiming that there is a third dimension is heresy, and that Area 33H, which is this kind of undescribed area, is forbidden, and then they're all sent away again.
Do you want to hear a nice little fact?
Yeah.
Go on, so 33H in hexadecimal is 51, so they're talking about Area 51.
Very nice, very nice.
They did their homework.
Not very much homework, to be fair, but a little bit of homework.
I learned quite a lot. Anyway.
Good, good.
Back home, Hex reasons to Arthur that there might be a third dimension, and Arthur chastises her for having ideas that might get her into trouble. But then that night, Arthur has a dream that he meets a dot, a line, and then a sphere called Spherius.
I loved the dot.
Yeah.
Because the dot can't accept anything that isn't it. There is nothing except it. It is the king. And any sounds it thinks is its own ideas. So when Arthur Square is talking to it, it just keeps laughing. Ha, 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 ha. Aren't I funny? I keep thinking about things. Ha, 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 ha. I just love the dot. It is great.
The dot was a lot of fun.
He was.
I enjoyed the line less.
Well, the line was more aggressive.
So
is this trying to tell us that we should all be self-centred and be happy? I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, we can get into the kind of deep messages of the film later, because I thought there might be a number of them.
Oh, please do.
We meet this fair called Spherius, and they go round this third dimension. And afterwards, Arthur wakes up and he realises that Hex was right all along. Meanwhile, Hex's grandmother, who, bit of a bit part, also pink square.
Yeah, a little bit sexist.
Not sure about...
yeah, I couldn't tell. Yeah. Being colourblind, I couldn't tell.
So. Hex has a bow to show that she's a girl.
Yes.
That's true.
But then it's an oppressive society, so what do you expect? Anyway, meanwhile, Hex's grandmother has given her mother's work, which confirms there is a third dimension. And so Hex...
Oh, of course, yes.
So Hex trots off to 33H to see it. There, the circles go to arrest a heretic who's breaking into 33H. But instead of Hex, they arrest Arthur, who's hidden Hex in the third dimension.
Yeah.
Arthur's put on trial, and there Hex is able to convince the masses that there is a third dimension after all, and the circles therefore are overthrown.
Hurrah!
We're left with Spherius tutting about how ridiculous it would be to have a fourth dimension.
How ridiculous.
And then some shapes. And that's the end.
Shall I play the trailer by popular demand? Let's play the trailer.
Yes. Okay, yes, please do.
Okay.
Imagine a vast plain. A world of only two dimensions, on which triangles, squares, pentagons, and other figures live and move freely about.
Configuration makes the man. Calculate.
Get to your squarical! Now!
You're only a square.
Thanks, brother.
They know nothing of our three-dimensional world.
Such a notion is, of course, absurd, and furthermore, illegal.
But that's all about to change.
Where did you come from?
I come from space, the third dimension.
No! No, you're not serious!
Based on the beloved novel by Edwin A. Abbott.
Tonight our world faces a grave threat.
I can prove there is another dimension to space that is upward.
That's so hard to imagine. But wouldn't that be amazing?
My own infinite universe of zero dimensions!
Wonderful. We're going to be truncated. Oh, not that angle!
I came to reveal the truth of the third dimension, no more.
Dude, you're freaking me out!
what exactly is a dimension?
Mathematics, reason, and imagination will help reveal the truth.
Flatland, the movie.
The third dimension is real.
Wasn't that dramatic?
It was lovely. I mean, you know how we, in the Donald Duck movie, where you were talking about that 1950s yes. voice? I think Michael York has that beautiful.
Oh, but it is. It's also Hollywood. It's like, it's a time for war. It was a time for shapes. It was a time for shapes, angles, circles, and war. And it's lovely. But I mean, what I liked about this film, I'm not talking about the, you know, I'm not going to give my rating away straight away, is that,
sure.
you know, this book, which I'm holding now in my hand, Edwin Abbott.
He is, listeners, I can Flatland, tell you he is holding it.
Was written in 1884. Okay, so
no!
it. Yes, yeah. 1884. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's quite different. You were saying the film was sexist. The book is very sexist.
I wanted to get into this at some point, so I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Only the male shapes in the book have any dimensions at all.
Yes. Well, that's in Flatland. If you're, because they actually go to lower levels as well, but they're always one dimension less than the males. So in Flatland, women are lines. In Lineland, women are points. And in Pointland, there is only you, so you're the only point.
But in Sphereland, though,
oh,
in space...
We never see a woman in Sphereland, do we? Actually, there is... I think we should watch this at some point. The sequel to this, which is called Sphereland. Wow. So at some point in the future...
It's terribly sexist, and it's also impenetrable. I mean, the language is very Victorian.
I've read it after this because I was very interested, but I found it very interesting. I mean, do you want to? I mean, have you got a bit of the sexism right there? Because I think you should read it.
Oh, gosh, well, I can find some. But for the consequences that as things now are, we males have to lead a kind of bilingual, and may I also say bi mental existence. With women, we speak of love, duty, right, wrong, pity, hope, and other irrational and emotional conceptions, which have no existence, and the fiction of which has no object except to control feminine exuberances. But among ourselves and in our books, we have an entirely different vocabulary. Blah, 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 blah. It's just trippy. I mean, it's trippy. And as far as I could work out, it was basically ignored. He wrote it in a, late 19th century exuberance, and nobody read it at all.
Well, it was meant to be a satire on the sort of class system of the Victorians,
yes,
wasn't it?
Exactly. So it was like a clever little novel just to sort of, denigrate everybody that wasn't there. from what I could work out, probably, about 20 years later, Einstein started coming up with, theories of relativity. And for which it was necessary to pretend there was another dimension that nobody could see. And everyone said, well, hang on a moment, there's this book that somebody wrote before. Yeah. Maybe we can believe there's another dimension we can't see. But I think the entire social aspect was lost and has been lost in the film as well. Not that it was very interesting.
Well, I think the film, on some way, tried to right some wrongs. Because by making the protagonist, Hex, the female character, I think they were trying to say, okay, this book is extremely sexist and went weird ways. But let's at least give the female the protagonist role.
Well, do you know, it does actually pass the Bechdel test.
It does, yes.
Yeah, because Hex and the grandma have a conversation about mathematics. Pretty cool.
Lovely. It's lovely, yeah.
Okay, how about this? Lead character, pretty much, Martin Blooming Sheen.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Again, I know.
Big names. Michael York, Martin Sheen.
The greatest president that never was, Martin Sheen.
I know. I was just like, President Bartlett, yeah, is a square.
Absolutely. Oh, dear. But
having never seen, was it West Wing? I can't comment.
What? So. Get yourself to a box set this Christmas immediately, Thomas.
So can I throw a couple of questions out to you guys? Because before we get to the maths, because I don't think this is maths, particularly Liz, because you're very good with words. I want to see if you can verbalise these ideas.
Oh, bloody hell, all right.
So the first one is, can you describe another dimension? Mm.
Okay, well, this is definitely in the math zone, because that's one of my first questions.
Okay. Because I don't think I... Well, there you go. There's the first question. I can't answer, because it's very difficult.
I asked a couple of people on my team last week. We were... I'd asked them to do quite a sort of difficult task, and I said...
Imagine a fourth dimension?
Yes, it was. And I tried to say, perhaps you guys could go off and cook something up. But instead I said, perhaps you guys could go off and cock something up. Which is pretty
much... I'm using that. Anyway, what were we talking about? Back to the film. Sorry, I took us off on terms of dimensions and woolly people.
Yes. I mean, do you know, it actually really reminded me at the beginning of 1984.
Ooh. Yeah, good call.
So, okay, like, yes, you know, yes. Where he goes into an office and he works for a ministry, but only certain people can work for a ministry, and there's special rules if you do work for the ministry, and you have to believe certain things.
And everything comes down, and here is the new rule, and we've always been at war with this person. Yeah,
and that there is this kind of slightly mystical voice that tells you what to believe.
Yes.
So maybe George Orwell... Red Flatland.
Ooh.
And was like, hang on, maybe we've revealed a kind of decades old scandal.
Put a third dimension on this, I've got gold.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
A steel tongue makes a happy life is the moral of the Flatlanders, isn't it?
So in the film, everything all turns out nice. You know, Arthur Square and Hex are justified by the end.
Mm.
In the book, what happens is Arthur gets incarcerated, and the book is him writing this all down. And so at the end, it's sort of, please read this book and know that there is this third dimension.
I like that a lot more, because that, it makes you
wonder... fascist?
It makes you wonder whether he's crazy or not.
Okay, because it was all a dream with Spherus.
It's a bit more ambiguous. That maybe he is just imagining the third dimension, and we're all in his head.
Gosh, I mean, the animation is beautiful. It really was. Did you ever have one of those kaleidoscopes you looked through when you were a kid?
You
turned the thing, and all the little grains of sand or glass or whatever it was fell down, and you saw the pattern in the mirrors. It reminded me very much of that. It's beautifully done.
I mean, did you notice it was very clever? They used, for the insides, because of course these flatland people wouldn't be able to see the insides unless they go to the third dimension. But all the insides of these circles and polygons were fractals, which are space-filling curves. So that's why their organs were fractals, because they've got to fill the space inside the animal. I thought that was very clever.
There were lots of really nice little touches, like... the fact that the school was called St. Euclid's, for example.
Oh, it was called... Yes, no, I noticed
Arthur,
that.
The famous geometer.
Was Arthur called Arthur for any reason? Are there any famous Arthur mathematicians?
Well, his brother. You know how he's in the office with his brother?
Yeah.
His brother was called Abbott after the author Edwin Abbott Abbott.
Edwin Abbott Abbott?
Huh. Yeah, his middle name was Edwin A. Abbott, but the A stood for Abbott. So his name was Edwin Abbott Abbott. Which I quite like. Because, you know, do you know the joke about Benoit B. Mendelbrot?
And the B's.
No.
So Benoit B. Mendelbrot worked on fractals. And the joke is, what does the B in Benoit B. Mendelbrot stand for? It stands for Benoit B. Mendelbrot.
Ah.
You're only laughing to justify me
No, I'm not. It's like lots of mirrors looking at each other.
So it's a recursive...
And so that's the idea. This B algorithm. Just a self-recursion, yeah.
Yeah.
So I quite like that about Edwin A. Abbott. It's just in there as well. Abbott's all the way down.
And why would you do that to a kid?
What, you know, the best middle name I've ever heard is from one of our friends. And she said, whatever you do, whatever first name you give, give this middle name with a schm at the beginning. So it'd be like Thomas Schmommers. Ben Schmen. And I think that's genius. Liz Schmiz. Yes.
Well, no, I mean, the reason I'm only known as Liz is because all of my names are Liz.
Really?
Liz.
So I'm named after...
You're Liz Lizington.
All of my grandparents, all of whom were called Liz. So actually, my full name is Liz.
Okay.
And also my last name is Liz. So it's Liz.
Well, look, I mean, making up names is absolutely fine. I mean, Thomas has made up an entire relationship, so it's perfectly fine.
I was thinking of Thomas's snowball fight with Lorraine the other day. Thomas throwing snow into empty spaces.
Don't wanna.
So how do you have a snowball fight in two dimensions?
so.
Well, I suppose you
have a snowball snowball fight in two dimensions. Yeah, you could do that.
But they wouldn't be balls.
Well, they'd be circles.
So you'd have a snow circle fight.
Yes, you'd have a snow circle.
Do you get weather in two dimensions?
In the book, you do. Because there is a slight asymmetry in the gradient. And the rain always comes from the north. So that's how they know which way north is, essentially.
So, I mean, I was wondering about this. Because we kind of live in two dimensions. In the way...
We do, because we're always stuck on a surface.
We're constrained by gravity. And I was thinking, how cool would it be if you could actually not be constrained by gravity? And then I thought somebody should invent something to do with that. And I thought, well...
Well, it's called diving.
Or a plane.
But you can't... Unless you've got a pilot's license, you could, it's easier to get a diving license, I suspect, than a pilot's license.
Yes, but, I mean, we affect... You know, even though we have different floors and things on our houses, we effectively live in two dimensions, so...
Just different slices of different dimensions.
What about when I'm excited and I jump up and down?
Yeah, but you can't really do anything useful in the third dimension, can you? Well, okay.
okay, here's the game. What sport do you need three dimensions for? Or what sport could you do in two dimensions?
In two dimensions. With snooker.
Snowball fights. So
snooker.
Snooker you do.
Billiards! Donald Duck can show you how. Basketball, you need three dimensions.
Oh, there you go. Yes, okay, basketball. Yep. Well done.
Probably soccer as well.
Well, I don't know. I think you could do it.
Just have it on a flat plane, Just have the goals flat, and you're fine.
Because soccer would, if you had two dimensions in soccer, you'd just like lay three or four defenders down in front of the goal, and there'd be no way.
So you couldn't chip it over them.
But you could make them form a human pyramid now.
Ooh. Quidditch.
Right.
Okay.
You need the third dimension for real.
I think I'm the only podcast presenter that enjoyed the pile up of footballers, the sort of human mound.
The pyramid of footballers.
I might just take a moment.
You're gonna have that. Enjoy your third dimensional pyramid of footballers.
Wow.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, here's a question for you guys. This is probably mathematical as well, but I'm going to say it's biological.
Wow.
Can you have
a pyramid of footballers?
Two dimension. Can you have a pyramid of footballers? Can you have a 2D animal, or affect it? Of course you can't in three dimensions, because you've always got a bit of height, no matter how small you are. But an effective 2D animal.
Is any bacteria?
Oh, good thinking straight off the bat. Well done.
What about Pac-Man?
Oh.
Pac-Man is 2D,
Pac-Man is
not an animal.
<It's>, yeah. Well, the way he treats those ghosts. Oh.
Ghosts? Sorry, you said goats.
Oh, goat. He said goats. He definitely said goats.
What does Pac-Man do to goats?
I don't know.
You're like, well, he's mum.
It's been a long day.
What? What's my mum doing to goats? How do you know?
Anyway, Ben, rather than Pac-Man, is like your mum.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to put on our merch. Where we get it printed. T-shirts.
Ben
rather than Pac-Man, is like your mum. It's what our t-shirts
sell
will
like
say.
Hotcakes.
Yeah.
But no, you hit the nail right on the head. So you can't have too complex a digestion system. Because if you think about humans or most animals, you have a hole in the mouth, the food goes in, and you have an anus where it comes out. So the food never actually goes into your body. You're essentially a tube, okay? And all the nutrients are sucked out. So if you had that kind of digestion system in 2D, that would separate the animal, because the tube would cut them in half. So to have an animal in 2D, an effective animal, they have to be able to... The hole that is their mouth also has to be their anus, or they have to be able to digest it like bacteria. So some fungi act like 2D animals.
Hmm.
There you go.
Does that, do you think, take us to maybe the math zone? To start off with, it's going to be pretty obvious, but I'd like to talk about dimensions.
Yep.
So here are my questions about dimensions. A, is there an infinite number? B, and I think we should take B first, to break with tradition. did we see a 4D shape at the end of the film? And C, is time a dimension?
Right. So let's start with C, actually, because that's the easiest. Yes. Anything you can measure is a dimension.
Is it a dimension in the same way that I understand other dimensions?
Ooh. That's bringing in a whole different variable. In fact, you yourself are a dimension. How many lizards are you? You know, you said you were six lizards down the line. So you could measure your family tree on a dimension of lizards.
Nope.
Whoa, okay.
No, you don't like that.
No idea.
Most of the dimensions you know are continuous, where that is a discrete dimension.
Oh.
So you can't have 1.5 lizards.
Well, you could if you chop me in half.
Well, I think 1.5 would have to clone you and then cut that one in half and get a bit messy.
Let me try answering it in a different way.
Okay.
So we mentioned when we were talking about the film that, you know, Flatland was just seen as a sort of allegorical novel. Mm. So it was just meant to be a Victorian social commentary.
Indeed.
And everyone sort of filed it under the crazy pile. And then this chap called Einstein came along and came up with his special theory of relativity. Mm-hmm. And the special theory of relativity, as I understand it, basically said, well, look, how do the dimensions we see interact? So we've got the three dimensions, height, width and length, three dimensions, okay, that we move in. And we said, you know, obviously we can jump a bit, but we can't really go up and down on our own. But we're aware these dimensions exist. So Einstein then came along and said, aha, I can add a fourth dimension, which I'm going to call time. And you can move in time just as much as you can move in any other
dimension.
I mean,
we are moving in time. We move at a rate of 1 second per second. And unfortunately, we can't change that.
Yes. But there are things that move in time in a different way.
There are, yes.
So you can, you know, subatomic particles will often go backwards and forwards in time. To them, they don't see time in the same way we do. So it's just a dimension. Mm. And, you know, if I want to, I can give you a grid reference. I can give you a height. I can give you a time. And that's a perfectly well-defined thing. I give you any point in the universe at any time point in the universe. And we obviously have to agree what those coordinates are because, you know, we need to be able to cut the same coordinates as well. Mm-hmm.
And what's really nice is this all relates back to your GPS in your car. So even though this sounds very fancy, most people use it every day in the GPS in their car.
And they just don't know. Or on their phone, you know, your phone would not tell you where you are without, you know, some theory developed by a patent clerk in, where was he, Germany?
Germany probably, yeah.
Austria. Yes, I can't remember. You know, this is the point. So you remember in Flatland, we had, you know, the two-dimensional thing would... the one-dimensional line, so the king of the lines, refused to acknowledge that there could be a two-dimensional world.
Yes.
And the two-dimensional people refused to acknowledge there were the three-dimensional world.
And three said that there couldn't be fourth, which was annoying, I felt.
So, but, you know, for us to try and imagine, you know, a 10-dimensional space or an 11-dimensional space, doesn't that blow your mind?
Yeah.
You know, just because we can't imagine it, we can write down a set of numbers and we can identify where we are.
The mathematics works well. You know, you don't have to worry about thinking about it if you can write it down in terms of mathematics.
But much as we saw the shape, the three-dimensional shape imposed in the temple in Flatland, which became a series of two-dimensional shapes moving in time, it's possible to believe we can see echoes of a 10-dimensional space in our 4-dimensional universe. So we can at least, you know, get some shadows of that. And it's like, I'm forgetting my philosophy, but the puppets, the shadows on the cave.
Plato's cave.
Plato's cave. It was Plato, was he? Okay. He was the father of Socrates, or the teacher of Socrates.
Socrates,
back to Bill and Ted. Imagine we've got a light shining and there's a sock puppet in front of it and the sock puppet is three-dimensional and all we can see, all we can infer about the three-dimensional shape is there's a shadow. And this was a sort of analogy, I believe, for sort of, you know, the existence of God or not the existence of God.
When we do our live show...
Yes?
Shall I be a sock puppet?
I was in Germany last week and I actually gave a lecture with a sock puppet. It was great.
Did the sock puppet know more maths than you?
It was Dr. Socko and he spoke like this. Yeah, okay, I'm going to talk over here. You, Thomas, turn the slide. Okay, now if you're seeing this...
I love the way in 20 seconds we've gone from a very deep comment about the existence of the universe, superstring theory, and the existence of God, to Tom with his hand up some sock.
One of the girls had knitted this sock during the conference. And it had been a big thing during the conference. Like, wow, you're actually creating something where we're just mathematicians. And so then I used it as part of my lecture. It was great.
Yeah. Wow.
Sorry, your three questions. Go back to your third question. The easy answer is, yes, it is a dimension. Ben went on the whole diatribe. But for me, a dimension is just anything you can measure. But is it like you think of it? Probably not.
Okay. At the end of the film, was it a 4D shape at the end?
You're actually seeing three dimensions of the two dimensions. Because you've got that time there, because you've got that movement, you could think about as the shape moves, as the square moves, as Arthur Square starts from his house and goes to his office, you could think about it being a tube. And that would be a three-dimensional tube because there would be squares stacked on each other. It could zoom in and out.
Is there a mouth on one end and an anus on the other?
Well, yes, if you keep the orientation the same. But you, yourself, you could rewind the video and therefore travel through time in that two-dimensional space. That's the third dimension.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Now, you can extend that to human beings. So, imagine in the morning, you were in a bed.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, you're going to go back to bed. So, your life has just been one long tube leading from bed to bed. Okay. You have been a Taurus. And so, if you could control...
No, she's a Gemini.
That's just a Virgo. So if you could control time, you'd essentially move around this tube. So if you could go back to midday and have lunch, you'd move to the middle of the tube. If you moved to the end, you'd go to bed. If you go to the morning, you'd go to bed. And you'd just be moving around this tube of you. Mm-hmm. Have you ever watched Donnie Darko? Because they did it quite well.
I have. Long time ago, though.
But Donnie Darko had this idea of these tubes spreading out from people's chests.
Mm-hmm.
And that would sort of show what they would be doing about 5 seconds into the future.
Ah, okay.
So that's just the idea. It's just this tube idea. And that's the fourth dimension, because you could move within that tube.
Yes, I understand that.
I don't think I'm helping here.
No, you are. I'm... apparently a Taurus, by the way, just in case.
Oh, okay, there we go.
But by minutes, by minutes. I thought I was an Aries.
Right.
My whole life, my mum insisted I was an Aries, and my dad insisted I was a Taurus. But I live with my mum, so I assumed she was right. And then after my dad died, we were clearing out his house, and we found a letter that my grandma had written Jonathan Kaner. To ask him what star sign I was.
Sorry, who's Jonathan? Who's Jonathan Kaner?
I think he was worked for the Daily Mirror. He was there. You know, the Russell Grant. He was their astrologer.
But he was there for years and years and years and years. Anyway, my grandma wrote to him, and
I love this. And so he said that you're a Taurus.
I am apparently a Taurus. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, you do talk bull. Anyway.
tubes. Yes. Okay.
Tubes.
I get the idea of tubes.
No, actually, hold on. You know what I always say when people ask my star sign?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Pyrex. I'm a test tube baby. Thank you, Ben. You can use that one.
That's rubbish.
I did say it was good. The other one that Billy Connolly does is Sagittarius, half man, half horse, licensed to shit in the street.
That's funny either. Back to the mask.
Tubes. So, yes, no, tubes.
The 4D shape.
So the Tesseract. Now, there is actually a building which is sort of, as Ben was suggesting, the shadow of a 4D Tesseract, which is in France. It's called La Défense. And I've been there. It's a wonderful building. And essentially, it's a cube, a hollow cube, so you can stand within it. And then it zooms out to a bigger cube. And that smaller cube and the bigger cube are connected. Okay? And that's a shadow of the four-dimensional structure.
Mm-hmm.
So we can draw a 3D shape on a 2D piece of paper.
Yeah.
Or we can represent it as well. So what you could do is you could draw a square, and you could draw another square inside, and then you can link the corners of the inner square to the outer square.
Yes.
So it is possible to sort of see, I think you could quite well see one dimension above whatever you're representing it in. So in two dimensions, you can see... you can sort of see 3D.
But I think the best way to think about it, if you want to really think about what the 4D is just imagine it evolving and then just have that dimension in your mind going backwards and forwards. So have the square growing and shrinking. And so although you can't see that whole 4D shape of all those squares at the same time, you can imagine it growing and shrinking and growing and shrinking. And that's the 4D, the 3D shadow of that 4D shape.
I mean, I always found visualizing anything shape-wise incredibly difficult, and I remember my absolute nemesis at school was relative velocity. And
what? Whoa, you did relative velocity?
I could not do it, and I have this memory of being kind of 17 and being in my living room and having a chair and my mum, and I was like running me and my mum like running around so I could try and visualise.
And that's really relative velocity.
Because
your mum's your relative.
Time is relative because it moves slower when you're with your parents.
But yeah, I found it really, really hard to, and I remember.
And I agree.
My best friend.
I wouldn't say I have a great fourth dimensional. When I was at this conference in Germany, I went to a museum which was the world's only mineral and maths museum, which I quite love. You know, this village has come together and thought, what do we have? Well, we've got a mine and we've got a maths institute. What should our museum represent? Well, minerals and maths. But what's really great is they had a whole wall, a digital wall, of where you could rotate four-dimensional shapes and get those 3D shadows. So I'll put links to this on the website because they're free to download and you can play around with them.
Okay, so that was a 4D shape. And my first math question about dimensions was, is there an infinite number of dimensions?
Yes, yes. Interesting. Well, mathematically, you can have as many as you like.
Right.
But there's a question here about infinity. Are they countably infinite or uncountably infinite? So countable means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Integers.
Yeah.
So one dimension, two dimensions, three dimensions we're all okay with. But again, yes, you could have 5, 6, 7 infinite dimensions. Can we have 1.3 dimensions? 2.7 dimensions? 7.8 dimensions? And the answer is yes. And that's where you get the fractals appearing.
Okay, so explain that a bit more. So a fractal is a 2D shape.
Oh, no, it'd be any size shapes. You could have three dimensions for 3 point but something.
The ones people see will look like 2D shapes. Yeah.
I will link to some that are higher dimensions. So have you heard of the Koch snowflake?
No. Is it a really, really unlikable millennial?
Or an ice cream.
Good idea, but not quite. Actually, have you ever seen a picture of the British Isles?
No, Tom, I've never seen a map.
Well, there you go. So if you measured the British Isles with a kilometre-sized ruler, you'd get a measurement. Mm-hmm. Okay, you'd be able to go around, you'd get a measurement.
Where are you going to get a kilometre-sized ruler from?
You'd get it from a satellite. So you'd have a map where the scale was 1 kilometre. If you then zoomed in to...
Sorry, Tom, you can't just go into B&Q and get a kilometre-sized ruler.
So if I wasn't bound by gravity, I could just zoom up to a satellite and get a kilometre-sized ruler.
This is what Google Earth is for, people. Google Earth does this for you. You don't need to fly. God blimey. Right, okay.
You don't actually have to measure it. You can look at a large-scale map.
Yes, so if you look at a large scale map and measure it with your ruler, it'll be a kilometre sized ruler because that's the scale bar. If you zoom in, you'll have a bit more detail in the coastline. So if you measure again, it will be slightly longer.
Mm-hmm.
If you zoom in and use, say, a metre sized ruler, or then a 10 centimetre, or a 1 centimetre, or a 1 millimetre sized ruler, if you kept zooming in, the coastline of Britain would get longer and longer and longer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what a fractal is. It can have an infinite length, but have finite, it can fill finite space.
Oh.
So an ant walking around the coast of Britain would have to walk substantially faster than a human walking around, which would have to walk substantially faster than a giant walking around.
Well, not faster, but it would go on a longer tour, yes.
What about a giant ant?
Oh, no.
Wow. Well, I don't know.
Or an ant-sized giant. I don't know. But anyway, so let's try and create a proper fractal. What can we do?
Am I a fractal? Is something tiny ran around me? Would it go in and out a lot?
Your lungs. Your lungs have fractal properties.
Ah.
Because if you think about it, your lungs are these big shapes, but inside they've got alveoli, and inside those they've got little wrinkles. And that's all down to wanting to maximise the air transference between your lungs.
Mm.
Your blood system is a fractal. So it starts off with big veins and then goes to smaller veins and then smaller and smaller until you're down to very fine capillaries. So fractals have weird structures. Recursion and self-similarity, that's what it is. It's repeating the same structure, but getting it smaller and smaller at each scale.
Yeah. Okay.
And these things have dimensions which are not whole numbers.
Exactly, yes.
Wow.
So your lungs would be somewhere between 2 and 3.
Ooh, yes, they would be, yes. Because they're filling the third dimension, yes.
Is there anything with pi dimensions?
That is a great question. And you could probably construct something. I don't know off the top of my head, but I will look into this for when we put the links up. That's a good question.
Yeah, thank you.
It's not as good a question as what could you walk around the outline of Britain in the giant ant. I mean, the giant ant is something you might actually want to do. In fact, I've got an aunt who's quite tall.
Oh, Ben.
My mother's sister.
Okay, if I can bring you to my next math question.
Yes!
Okay, this is a bit more in maths history. What things are there out there that, and in fact, to some extent you've already answered this, but that maths has told us that we can't see or measure, but we know. So in the film, Hex says, well, that you must be able to do 2^3, therefore you must be able to have 3D shapes.
Yes. So it's the maths predicting what she can't see.
Yeah. So what examples are there from other examples are there from maths that where we've learned something?
What about Galileo?
Oh, very good. Yes.
So, you know, astronomy, people were predicting the existence of planets, you know, from the available evidence without actually being able to see the planets.
Yeah.
And then I believe it was Galileo did some, you know, calculations and then sort of looked up in the sky and said, oh, there's going to be a planet right there. And of course, it was right. So he's using mathematics to do science. If you want. One of the things about proving a scientific theory is you must be able to make predictions.
Yes,
no, it was Halley, wasn't it? It was Halley's comet.
Well, I think also Gauss did this. I don't know if this is a different one, but Gauss did a method. He produced a method, it's called Gauss's method. Everything's called Gauss. Where you could predict where the next thing was given a certain amount of data. This is Gauss's method. And he predicted
where... Did we talk about this last week?
Probably. We like talking about Gauss, or I'd like talking about it. They knew where Pluto had been, and they lost it. So he took the data, and then predicted where it would be, and they found it again. Actually, there's a lot of this stuff done in astronomy, because of the effects of one body on another. So there are some planets, some moons of Jupiter or Saturn, I can't remember which, some planet that has a moon, and its orbit wiggles, and it wiggles in a weird way. And we don't know what's called, well, we predict that it's another planet we can't see affecting its orbit. So even though we don't know where this orbit is, this other planet is, we can detect its effect.
Ah. And what about black holes? Didn't we think there were black holes before we ever measured them or found them?
So this is what LIGO has seen. So essentially what they did is they got originally two and now at least three.
Oh, so they've got quite a few now, haven't they?
Detectors in different places on the Earth.
Mm.
And they did an awful lot of engineering and saw when these things moved very, very slowly up and down. Okay, and these things moving very slowly up and down corresponded to gravitational waves, which were again predicted by our friend Einstein, but never proved. So they've had this theory which is 100 years old, and they've now been able to build some very sensitive detectors that can detect gravitational waves, which happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, by working out, you know, if you've got one in London that moves a little bit and one in New York that moves a little bit later, you can sort of triangulate where these gravitational waves are.
Mm-hmm.
So you can work out what, you know, presumably happened in order to cause these gravitational waves. So I think they've now seen two stars falling into each other, and they've seen something very big falling into a black hole just by, you know, seeing a needle move up and down effectively. So again, this is something predicting. You know, Einstein predicted this in his theory, that there would be gravitational waves, but they're very, very little things, okay?
You have to have very sensitive apparatus. Yeah.
Yes, and we've just got the technology in order to be able to detect them. And it's claimed, and indeed they've won a Nobel Prize for this claim and this experimental result, that we're now able to see the results of this. So we're never going to be able to see black holes fall into each other, because then there wouldn't be black holes. And we can see the results of it. Isn't that marvellous?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's actually genuinely exciting, that.
More maths.
Okay. Maths.
Sorry.
I've only got one more maths question, which is good, because we've been going over an hour. This is definitely a maths history question, and you may not know it, but... do you know any examples of when maths has been forbidden? So when things that maths have proven have been heresy?
Forbidden maths, heresy.
Copernicus. Copernicus, you know, gathered some evidence and said, well, look, the Earth goes around the sun. And the Pope at the time said, well, this is ridiculous. And I think the last Pope has just pardoned Copernicus.
it's about time.
Yes. Officially. I think, you know, he'd been forgiven and been invited to...
Didn't also Galileo get in trouble with the Pope at some point?
I think everyone gets in trouble with the Pope. I mean,
I'm sure the current Pope likes mathematics very much.
I've never met him. What other legal things has the maths...
There is... you're not allowed to use Bayes' theory, I think, anymore in a court. So do you know about this, Ben?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is this idea that Bayes' theorem gives you a way of weighing up probabilities based on what you know. So it's how much do I have... What's the probability of A given I know B? It's very much like the question we had, which is what's the probability I've got a boy... Yeah, given what's the probability I've got two boys, given I have a boy, so that you have extra information.
I think you should let them go, Tom.
No, what's the probability they're all mine? So, what's the probability I've got two boys based on the fact that I know I've got one boy, and so that changes the probabilities.
So yes, so this is called the prosecutor's fallacy.
Yes.
Okay. So like, imagine you've got someone in court. Okay, and he or she has been charged with a crime. Okay, and their DNA was found all over the crime site. Okay, so the prosecutor can say, aha, there's this person in court. Okay, and this DNA will only match 1 in 10 million people. So the chances of this person being not guilty are 1 in 10 million. Therefore, you should convict him. Okay, so that's one argument. Mm-hmm. But another argument could be, well, the person standing in the courtroom, okay, and the police obviously found the DNA, found someone who matched that DNA, of which there's maybe 5 people in the country, and rounded up the one that was, you know, nearest or looked the dodgiest or whatever it happened to be, and put them in the dock. And so there's 5 people it could have been based on that, and the defence can say, well, hang on, you know, there's only a... There's a one, you know, there's a 4 in 5 chance that this person is not the person, so you should let him go. And this is the fallacy. Okay, so what is the right answer? And of course, it depends on how you gather the evidence. Mm. Okay, so it depends exactly, you know, what the police did and how you make the argument. So in certain jurisdictions, I believe that doing it this way has been banned. So Bayes' theorem was banned
in civil law. I mean, this isn't exactly... Well, it's certainly not exactly the same. It's not even that much the same. But it's slightly to do with probability. So back in the day, I actually don't know when it was, but a lot of people got asbestos, got mesothelioma from asbestos. And it's a horrible fatal illness.
Yeah, it is.
That,
it's
caused by exposure to asbestos. But the problem was when they came to sue people, that the mesothelioma was caused probably by a single fibre of asbestos. And people might have worked for, you know, 10 different companies where they were put in contact with asbestos.
And so
initially, and now it's a very long time since I've looked at this, so please don't get cross, listeners, if I've got this wrong, but I think this is what happened. Initially, the court said... You know, on the balance of probabilities, which is the test in civil law for whether you can say someone's liable for something.
Does that mean 50.1%?
I think it does, yes.
Okay.
So on the balance of probabilities, none of them were guilty because you couldn't tell which one it was. So there was a 1 in 10 chance that each of them was the cause. And so, but obviously, assuming that there was negligence... You then have lots of these big companies let off the hook for exposing people negligently to asbestos and cause them to have this illness. So
wait, hold on. Just a question. If they all have 1/10 of the probability of doing it, why not just sue them all for 1/10 of the money?
Well, so that's basically what they ended up doing. So they said, all right, we're just going to say, but obviously that's not, they didn't all cause it. Only one of them caused it. But because they didn't know which one, they said, well, fine, we're just going to split this up between the 10 people. And that's a massively oversimplified version of what happened. So, might not be right. Might have made it up. Who knows?
We need to do maths at the courtroom. We need to get a lawyer involved.
Well, I think we might know one as well.
Yeah.
Hey!
Anyway.
Okay, so any other questions then, Liz?
I think that is all my questions.
Excellent.
We we've had a brilliant set of questions. We've done sort of religious theory.
I was going to say, where we got to was Einstein. Not expected.
Before we go to the puzzle zone, I would like to appeal to our listeners to send us more examples by Twitter of times that maths was forbidden.
And if you want to contact us on Twitter, the Twitter handle is podcastmathsat. If you want to email us, then it is podcastmaths@gmail.com. And you can visit us on our website and message us there as well at www.mathsat.co.uk. And with that, shall we go to the puzzle zone?
Hey!
What about Facebook?
Facebook as well! Sorry, Ben added in now.
Facebook.com/mathsat. Find us on all your social media! Add us as friends. We're so needy. We're mathematicians. We don't have any friends.
I've got loads.
Liz has lots of... Yeah, but you need to get your own Facebook profile. The marvellous Liz. You're going to be a celebrity. My friend just listens for you.
Aww.
He said, well, I
my mum does. My mum listens for Liz as well. Anyway, and with that, are we ready to go?
Yes.
So, Ben. A while ago, yes. A long time ago, you posed a question. God. You've forgotten, haven't you? You've
forgotten. I've certainly forgotten.
Unbelievable. I can remind you, roughly.
Okay.
It was about the number of years.
Oh, this one. I can remember this
excellent.
One.
Excellent.
Yes.
Wait. Two. Right, so, is it two?
Well, hold on. Let Ben give the question again, and then you can shout out too. Go, Ben.
Liz.
Yeah.
When you leave this high-tech recording studio... Mm-hmm. Which we're all in. We go out in the street. What is the probability that the first person you meet will have an above average number of ears?
I do remember this now.
You gave us some options, Ben.
Yes. So I don't remember exactly, but was it zero, nearly zero, a half, nearly one, or pi?
Now... I think pie's out. And I think this is a really good question. I really like this.
Yeah.
What do you think, Liz?
Okay, so I haven't given it any thought, but let's kind of start from
throw it in.
So, so let's guess what the average number of ears is. And
exactly. Average... So I don't know of anyone with more than two ears.
So the average number of ears is probably nearly two.
Yes, so I think it's going to be less than two. Because you have some people who have damaged their ears or had one cut off, Vincent van Gogh.
I assume you mean the mean average, Ben.
Good clarification.
I mean, this is a very good question to ask, but let's, for the sake of argument, say the mean average.
Yes. So I assume the mean number of ears is about nearly two.
It'll be lower than two, and I think that's the important thing.
But it's lower than two, because you're right. There's some people who are born or have lost... one of their ears, and there's only one person I know with three ears. It's Captain Kirk. Because he had a left ear, a right ear, and a final frontier.
Oh my God, that's awful.
Oh, dear.
Ben, did you devise this problem just for that? Okay, so thinking about the fact that the average number of ears is nearly two, I guess the probability that the first person you meet will have an above average number of ears is probably nearly one, because
I would agree with
correct.
That.
Correct.
A huge number agree, of people yes. has yes. have two ears.
Very good.
Thank you.
So this is really good of thinking. Now, do you think this is important?
the problem or the podcast or ears?
Life.
So anything. Really. So this solution is trivial, obviously. I mean, we don't generally care how many ears a person has.
But I think it's important what Liz mentioned, this idea of clarifying what mean you mean, what average.
So to a certain extent. So it is true in the UK that if we talk about the mean average, then 80% of people earn less than the average salary.
The mean average.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. So 80% of people earn less than the average salary. So if you ever read, if somebody's about to do a strike and somebody, writes a press release, a trade union or, employee, whatever, sort of says, well, all our members earn less than the average salary. Well, of course, because everyone earns that. 80% of people earn less than the average salary. If you're let's say you're a corporate executive and you say, well, I'm going to make the average salary in this company higher. The best way to do that is to give yourself a $1 pay rise.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, because you're ahead, so you make it. Oh, okay. Okay.
So everyone on average has a higher salary. You're not really changing the company structure. Or give yourself $1 million. Who cares? Okay. Whenever you see averages, be very, very careful. So one thing statisticians tend to do...
Who else wants to see Ben's tax return?
Now, one thing statisticians tend to do is use the median average. And this is sometimes a much fairer measure. So median is you line everyone up in order. So you line, you know, everyone in the UK up in order. And the person with in the middle is the one with the most typical salary. So you line them up in order of salary. And the one in the middle has the typical salary. So median, in some sense, is the typical average. And then stupid questions like, you know, how many years do you have? Or, you know, what's the average salary? Have a lot less meaning. But I think it's a
nice question. It is.
When I used to teach different averages to kids, we always used to talk about height. So for the median, I would say, okay, well, we just line everyone up in order of height and we find who's in the middle.
Yeah.
And everyone will look very bored. And then for mean, I used to say, right, you've got 10 people and you stand everyone on each other's heads, and then you take a sword and you cut them into 10 equal pieces.
Have you done this in the classroom?
And this is, yeah, that's why they won't let me teach anymore. I only got a satisfactory in that particular Ofsted.
You still got a satisfactory? Wow, amazing.
Well, you know, I set some objectives. It was fine. But my kids always perked up a bit at that point because they were always like, that's also the way I taught them percentages. I said, right, if you want 1% of you, I'm going to chop you up into 100 pieces and I'm going to pick up one bit of it.
Maybe the ear.
So for some reason, the gorier the maths, the more attentive the class is what I learnt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, these horrible history books do so well, so.
Wow.
Anyway, so it's my turn for a maths question. And leading on from Ben, it's going to sound easy, but I want to see what the answers are given.
Ben does sound easy, actually. And actually, listeners, I'm going to tell you, he is actually quite easy.
You would know a lot more about than I would, Liz. You would know a lot more. So, what is 6 divided by 2 plus 1 times 3? Sounds easy. Oh. We will talk about it next time. What is 6 divided by 2 plus 1 times 3?
Okay.
Have you got that, Liz?
Yeah.
Excellent. And we'll talk about it next time.
No, you've got to remind me to think about it 24 hours before the podcast next time.
You could, like, or you could, like, listen to the podcast.
Oh, no. we're the only podcast that has fewer listeners than presenters.
Oh, it's sad because it's funny because it's true. Moving on, let's round up and go to the final scores. So, Liz, would you like to furnish us with an arbitrary scale and where the film and the maths fell upon that scale?
I'm going to mark it out of 128.
128, right.
But the only things allowed on my scale are powers of 2.
I was going to say that's a power of 2, so okay.
I am going to give it... but just to be clear on my scale, 64 is still half as good as 128. So it's not like I'm marking out of
weird.
9.
I like how... All right, okay.
So I'm going to give it... Oh, it's really hard because I actually want to give it about 100.
Well, you have to give it 128 then, surely, don't you?
No. I'm going to give it 64 because I don't want to give it 128. So I'm going to give it for the film, I'm going to give it 64. And actually, for the maths, I'm going to give it 128 because even though it wasn't like super complicated, it was pretty good at getting me to think about an abstract maths concept. In a really kind of clear way that I didn't think about before. So I did actually learn stuff, and kind of thinking about a dot as having zero dimensions was really kind of interesting new thing. So I'm going to give it 128.
Good. Excellent. Ben, what is your arbitrary scale?
I'm going to mark it out of 1.0812.
Okay.
Which is the number of dimensions of a particular Julia set, which is a type of fractal. Very nice. Yeah, I mean, in terms of film, it was quite pretty. It was only half an hour long. I think it's very useful. I think everybody should watch it.
Excellent.
So out of 1.0812, it was only 35 minutes long, and listeners should definitely go out and buy this movie, no matter what the expense. But, you know, it was quite a good, you know, half-hour movie, and, you know, every child should watch it. Every adult should watch it. So I'm going to give it 0.83. In terms of mathematics, I would like to see a little bit more explanation of some of the fun things we've talked about today, and the you know, the social commentary. I'm going to give it a 0.76.
Ooh, harsh. Harsh there, Ben. That's how it falls to me. I'm going to give it out of the number of ears, the mean number of ears of the populace of Britain. And so I'm going to give... Visually, I thought it was wonderful. I've actually watched it a number of times now because I wanted to just delve back into that world, and I thought it was a visual feast. So out of the number of ears, I'm going to give it 1.9.
Okay.
Out of the maths, it was simple, but again, just done so beautifully that I thought it was a great demonstration of complex ideas in simple ways. So I'm going to give it 1.99 for the maths.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Very high for a number of ears there. But that brings us to the question of what we're going to do next. And I'm going to pitch the idea of the Oxford Murders. Murders by number. How do we feel about that?
Okay.
Have you never heard of this?
Never heard of this at all.
So,
no, I've never heard of it.
It's based on a book called The Oxford Murders. And in it, I believe they have to follow a sequence of numbers. And it's called Bormat's Theorem.
It sounds obscure, but let's do it.
Hey, it's got Elijah Wood. Okay. It's got Elijah Wood and John Hurt.
Okay, cool. Again,
Oxford Murders. So next time, whenever we get together, actually, no, next time we might do a Christmas.
Oh, I love Christmas. I love maths at Christmas.
We might look into doing a maths at Christmas.
Can we sing Christmas carols?
You can only sing the 12 Days of Christmas.
Yes.
I will sing it from start to finish.
Excellent, and that will be the backing track. And so, that brings us to the end. I have been Thomas Woolley.
I have been the four-dimensional projection of Ben Parker.
And I have been a zero-dimensional dot.
And with that, we are winning at maths but losing at life. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
This podcast is a Random Walks production performed by Thomas Woolley, Ben Parker and the enigmatic Liz. Intro and outro music was Clonky Donkey by Nikolai Heidlas, and the incidental stings were Cartoon Bank Heist from YouTube Audio Library.